National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History, Tape 2. I am Mildred J. Menlo, and with my partner, Ruth Weiner, we are interviewing Charlotte Arnold. Now, you had a new piece you wanted to give us.
A thing about what we're doing, I've never mentioned that to anyone, they gave me, for Hanukkah, two certificates stating that my mother and father are being inscribed in the Immigrant Wall of Honor at Ellis Island. That's going to be, I guess it's not built yet, but they're raising funds for it. And very exciting to me, and I called and told my sister, and my sister just wept on the telephone because we know that that would have had great meaning for both of them to be put on an Immigrant Wall of Honor. You know,
that's
my
beautiful.
New piece.
That's beautiful.
I think it'd be interesting to find out how one does that. I should have asked them how you send that, but it's Lee Iacocca who chairs that. Mm-hmm.
I have a few questions about what we did last time, sort of little notes that I missed, and maybe you can kind of help me. One is you talked about your mother's volunteer positions when she was in Port Jarvis. For example.
Well, I know she was president of the Ladies Auxiliary there, and that's the one that I remember the most.
Ladies Auxiliary of what?
Of the synagogue, whatever. I was awfully young, and there was only one synagogue in Port Jervis anyway. I think it was an Orthodox synagogue. But she was president of the Ladies Auxiliary. After we moved to Middletown, she was very active in Hadassah. And also there was a group, and I hate to even say it now because it seemed like such an old person's group then, but it was plus 50 or 50 plus or something. Now that I think about it, I can't imagine somebody just 50 being considered old, but I guess they did. And she was quite active in that organization too. And we had talked, I mentioned something about my dad being in something, and I said, gee, I can't remember what it was, but I do remember, and I did remember later that it was called the Knights of Pythias. Are you familiar with that? And that is a Jewish organization. That he was not one to be active in things, but that particular thing, he enjoyed a good bit.
Good. When you told us about your brother and your sister, we didn't get their ages.
My brother is 52, or 52. My brother is 72, and my sister 68.
Yeah, great. And I missed your first husband's name.
My first husband's name was Herbert Ginsburg.
Ginsburg.
G-I-N-S-B-E-R-G.
B-U-R-G. Okay, and we kind of slipped over about him. How you met him, when you're married, what you know.
Well, I met him at school at the State University of New York. And we were married after graduation. Lived a year in upstate New York, Cambridge, New York. That was sort of interesting because there were two Jewish families in the whole town, us and I think the other family owned some kind of a store, I can't remember. I remember their name, I think their name was Shapiro, you wouldn't care about that, but that was an interesting sit because most of those people had never known any Jewish people at all. Very interesting little sort of Vermontish town. And then he went back to school and we lived
What did he do that year?
He taught school math. And then he went back to school to the University of North Carolina.
And for what?
Mathematical statistics. And we lived in Chapel Hill and in Durham. And my first child was born, and we lived in Raleigh. And my first child was born in Durham at Duke Hospital. Such a long time ago, they didn't even have a hospital in Chapel Hill now. They have one of the most famous hospitals.
Research Center.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It really is. A lot of people retire there. It was beautiful. And then we moved from there to Pittsburgh in 1954, and he worked and continues to work for Westinghouse Research.
When did you graduate from?
1951, I graduated from SUNY.
And you said when your sister got married, they moved away. Where to?
Moved away from my little town, yeah. But they live in Scarsdale, New York.
Yeah. Yes, uh-huh. And they moved
to New York City. They lived in New York City for a good while. My brother lives in Los Angeles now, and lived in San Francisco all of his life.
And you told us quite a bit about the two boys, but not too much about your daughter.
Really? That's funny, because everybody was making fun of me. We were down in Florida, and my kids make fun of me, because when I don't like somebody, and they've brought it to my attention, now I'm so self-conscious about it, but I would always say, that Mary, or that John, or that George, and they always laugh, because they can tell, I say, that George Jones, they say, oh boy, Mother doesn't like him. So my friends down in Florida were laughing at me, and I'd never thought about it. And they said that every time I talk about Debbie, I call her my Debbie. Mm-hmm. So that must be when I like somebody.
Yeah.
When I don't, they're that. And when I do, they're mine. And I'm surprised I didn't talk about my Debbie, because I'm really very proud of her. She's a very nice little girl. And I think I even showed you her wedding picture, didn't I? And she is an attorney. And she graduated from Tulane University and went to BU School of Law and to Tulane School of Law. And she's an attorney, a litigation specialist in New Orleans. And her husband also graduated from Tulane Law, and he's a practicing attorney too.
Go with Debbie. One more question before we go on. You were telling us about your dad. He was youngest of the family, of seven. He went to, and you named the place in Germany, began with a B.
Bremerhaven. Did I tell you the interesting thing about that? That all the anti-Semitism that he met up with in Bremerhaven, that's where they took the ship to America. Interestingly, if you talk about the United States as a melting pot, that I found out later that my husband's great-great-grandfather or whatever, and I don't know what the relationship is, had been the burgermeister, the mayor of Bremerhaven. Hmm. Hopefully it wasn't at the same time.
We're not going to investigate.
No,
that.
Please don't. I'd rather not.
That's
know.
Right. That's right. You've talked a little bit about Port Jervis and Middletown.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering if you give some sort of a notion of what kinds of towns they were.
Well, the Port Jervis,
J-E. Oh, mm-hmm. I was going to get wrong.
It's right on the Pennsylvania border, It's right across from Matamoras, Pennsylvania. It's just the river that separates them, the Delaware River. Or the Neversink, I'm not sure which, because both of them go along. There's a tri-state place right in near Port Jervis where New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York all meet.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that we lived there, when I was a little girl, it was a sort of a railroad town where it was like a junction or something, whatever you called, and and that was how my dad made his money, owned a diner, and most of his people, his customers were railroad people. I don't know what they do there now, because it's really not a railroad town, it's just sort of a little burg, And Middletown continues to grow, which sort of amazes me, because it's truly in the middle of nothing. It was the gateway to the Borscht Belt. I must tell you two things about the Borscht Belt. I had an interesting experience. The Borscht Belt played a big part in my young life, because we lived right near, Middletown is near Grossinger's and the Neville and Shawanga Lodge and all those other places that I can't think of the names of now. And we used to go up there on Sunday nights, my mother, for $5 you could go there and have these tremendous dinners.
Go where?
To any one of them. The Neville, we would go wherever there was some big star, and you know, there were always big stars up there. And one of the interesting things was, of course, my mother loved Myron Cohen. He was her very favorite. And she was a wonderful audience. They probably should have paid her to come because she used to laugh, you know, and laugh really hard. And all the jokes, which mostly were absolutely obscene, were in Yiddish. And that's how I learned.
you were motivated.
Yiddish word. I was motivated. And I used to say to my mother, what does that mean? And she'd say, shut up. But that's how I learned what they all meant. And it was. And I've always thought about them. My sister worked up at the mountains. I worked in camps as a camp counselor and a camp director. That resort area that was around Middletown was very important. Now, of course, it's not really a resort area anymore. Why it continues to grow, I don't understand. But now in the days of fast transportation and what have you, it's become almost a bedroom community for New York City. But in those days, that was a big trip from New York City up to Monticello. That was a very big trip, and Middletown was right in the way. But anyway, keeping that in mind, I had an appointment one day with George Werner, this is just recently, who's the dean of the Episcopal Church at the Cathedral downtown, the Episcopal Church, and to talk about the program and to see what kind of help he could be and what have you. Anyway, we started talking, and it was really sad because there were about six people there from my board, and you could have forgotten that they were all there. George Werner, the dean of the Cathedral for the Episcopal Church, was raised in the Borscht Belt. And we were telling Yiddish jokes and laughing about different people and everybody else. We never talked about the program for founders. And he is the most charming person, I'll tell you, if you ever wanted to have a speaker at something to talk about his youth. He, in the Borscht Belt, that's how he put himself through school, waiting on table in the Borscht Belt. It's a fantastic. The other day, I had someone in here to talk to me about a retail theft program that we're going to be doing with the county. So not part of the program, but part of our county plan. And his name is Dr. Seltzer. I don't know if you know him. He seemed youngish, 40-ish, I guess. He said something, I don't know what. Anyway, it turns out that he used to work as a comedian in the Borscht Belt. So, you know, again, I had other people in the room, and you could forget them all because we sat there for an hour and told Borscht Belt stories. So that was and then my mother's family used to come up from New York City and from Philadelphia to the Borscht Belt, and they always stopped, and we slept all over the house. Nobody worried that there weren't enough beds. People slept on floors and couches and chairs and three and four and five in a bed when Aunt so-and-so came, you know. And so we were sort of a hub of the whole family because they were always up and down, and then we would go up to these camps that they call Cahalanes. Anyway, I guess what I said was that my family came up to these Cahalanes where they cooked and had their shelf on the refrigerator, and they ate in the dining room, and we would go up and eat with them. And so we became the hub of the family. The family was very close, and it was very interesting. Also, it was good to be near New York City. I had great advantages going down to the Met and to plays, being that close. Our Girl Scout troop used to take trips down to the plays and what have you. So it was good. I think it was a good cultural advantage to live someplace like that.
Great.
You sure?
Yeah, that's what you wanted to get caught up with the past.
We have to go into more detail about your professional life or career and influences leading to career choice.
You're talking about what I do now or my original? I guess I think I did mention to you that originally I'd always wanted to be a school teacher, and I was very influenced by several teachers that I had. One, an English teacher that I had in junior high, whose name I do not remember. All of our teachers, and you'll remember this too, were all old maids in those days.
Oh, sure.
And she was, this one was particularly influential, and again, an English teacher. Librarians had a great influence on me, coming from an immigrant family where my parents were, if not illiterate, certainly undereducated, but encouraged me to read. But the librarians really encouraged me to read, and that's wonderful that they did that. And they would pick out my books and help me with them. Then I think I did mention to you that I had a teacher, Dr. Rosenblum, in high school, an English teacher who was very influential. And a couple of teachers, a Latin teacher and a guidance counselor, both of whom convinced my mother and dad that even though I was a girl, I should go to college. I think I also mentioned that my father was very concerned that I not be an old maid if I were a teacher, and I finally said to him, look at that, I got two of them, so we didn't have to worry about being an old maid, I guess. They were my influences to become a school teacher. And I did my practice teaching, and I did some, a little bit of here and there tutoring and et cetera. But my influences to become what I am now, which is, I guess, social service, came really from the Jewish community. And I think I thought I had mentioned that too.
Yes.
That B'nai B'rith women and the Anti-Defamation League were very strong influences on me. Lil Holsting, and Dorothy Binstock, very strong influences on me. They really took me by the hand, and because I did things and got things done, they never stopped pushing me. I think they were very disappointed when I sort of stopped in the movement up the ladder in B'nai B'rith, but at that point I really wanted to get a job, and that wasn't my direction.
Are you involved with B'nai B'rith at all?
Just
now?
Give money, really. If they asked me to do anything specific, I certainly would.
I just wondered because of the tumult they're undergoing
now. Yeah, I know. I've been reading about that. No, I'm not involved with them. I would do anything they asked. I do thank them. I think they helped me very much to get my way in the career. I did mention that although I had been doing a lot of civil rights things, Women in the Urban Crisis, which was Dorothy Binstock's thing, was my really foot up into the community. The other person who taught me how to use the people I know and how to use my talents best, of course, was Florence Risingstein. She was a great mentor to me, and she was the person all the time that I was president of Women in the Urban Crisis who I called constantly, even though it was Dorothy who started Women in the Urban Crisis and who gave me my start by asking me to chair that. It was really Florence who taught me how to do it, how you get elected officials to do what you want, how to use your power. It was really Florence who taught me how to use power.
She was a very special
She was
person.
Marvelous. She was a very special lady, and I would say that she probably was the greatest influence in my life as far as social service, but truly how to use power. She just knew how, in the nicest way.
Soft-spoken.
Without ever being abrasive or nasty or anything, and yet when she walked in a room, everybody knew that she was a powerful woman. And she was probably my biggest influence. She would have liked me again. I would have been a disappointment to her too, because she would have liked me to have stayed in the volunteer arena. and to do the things
both
that she was doing. That's nice.
There's no question.
But, you know, I still had to do what I had to do, which was to have a job that gave me an income. And so I sort of stayed within the social service purview. And it would have been nice if I'd had enough money and I hadn't had, you know, a kind of a marriage that I wanted to get out of to be able to do that, because I had a lot of things that I wanted to do in that too, but this was the way up. But so I think those were the biggest influences in my life.
Your neighborhood where you live.
Now?
Yes. Do you have any particular identification with it?
No, not really. No. I live in Squirrel Hill now, you know, I think, you know, but I'm sort of still a small town girl, you know, and when we moved here, we lived in the suburbs. We lived in North Versailles Township, and we lived in Forest Hills, and when I got divorced and Debbie went to college, my Debbie went to college, living in Squirrel Hill just made good sense to me, and I wanted to live in someplace secure, and I live in a townhouse, and I bought what I could afford, and I don't really have any identification.
Where is that?
It's near the John Minadeo School.
Oh, yes,
there's
a
little townhouse development. It was very reasonable for me. It takes me about 6 minutes to come to work. I get on the parkway and go to work, but I really, I don't do very much with that.
Do you have any close ties with any community or Jewish organizations? Are you involved in Jewish and community institutions in any way?
Well, no, I do belong to Tree of Life Synagogue.
Oh, that's your synagogue.
I am not terribly active in the synagogue, but I do go. I always make sure that I go for Yahrzeits and, you know, on the holidays. I've never been really active because it's hard to be active when you have a full-time job, and especially the older I get. I mean, what can I tell you? You know, when I go home at night, like tonight we're going out to dinner, and I'm beside myself because I'm really tired when I go home. I don't want to go home and start curling my hair again and, you know, and going out to dinner. So I don't do very much except pay my dues. I pay my dues and make regular contributions to B'nai B'rith Women, and of course I contribute to the Women's Division of United Jewish Federation. And lately we have a relationship going with the United Jewish Federation in regard to this man that I told you about from Israel, who the director of prisoner rehabilitation, who came here, and we're trying to find some money for him to send two of his staff to be trained. I thought UJF was going to give him some big $3,000. I thought UJF was going to give it to him. All of a sudden, that money disappeared. And he and I have these conversations on the phone, and I may go out of the Jewish community to try to find him the money to send two people here to be
sad.
Trained. I think it's sad, too. I think somebody surely should come up with that kind of money, because we're going to give them their room and board while they're here. All they need is a ticket from Israel, two staff people to come here to be trained.
Okay, where do we go now? You are Temple Sinai, okay.
No,
Tree of Life. Tree of Life, rather, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In politics, are you active in any way politically?
Well, I guess really not too much. I'm very close to Commissioner Forster. And as a matter of fact, the Chamber of Commerce is giving me and the Program for Female Offenders an award next month at his behest. He thinks we're great. So, I've on occasion worked the polls for him. I used to be very, as a young woman, I was very active in the Adlai Stevenson campaigns. I used to push my baby carriages around and do that. Other than that, I've been terribly careful about, I've sort of been apolitical because I have, the Thornbergs are very close friends of mine, And Dick Thornburg did a lot for me. I had a lot of political appointments during the time that he was governor. But, and I've never wanted to offend Tom, so I've been careful about that. Barbara Hafer is my girlfriend. And I don't know exactly how to handle that yet. I'm going to probably go to Tom Forster and say, do you mind if I become a Democrat for Hafer? But other than that, I've really been very, very careful not to be. I have, my husband's a Republican, and, but I have more Republican connections in a sense than he does. I mean, Barbara Hafer's my friend, Ernie Priet, Thornburg's, Walter Cohen, all of these people who are big Republicans in the state. But in Allegheny County, I've always been very active, more with the Democrats. But I just try not to pick sides because my money for the agency comes from all over.
Now, during the Depression, how did you manage?
How did my folks manage? I think that the Depression, it didn't affect them immediately. That was when they were in the diner business. And truly, it wasn't so much the Depression, except that it happened at a Depression time, which was bad. When they were in Port Jervis, the railroad built some kind of an overpass or an underpass. I guess it was an overpass. And what it did was take my dad's diners, he had two diners, it took them out of the railroad traffic area, as you can imagine. And it happened right in the middle of the Depression when there was no money for relocating and that kind of thing. My memory, I don't know, I thought I talked to you a little bit about this, maybe not, but my memory of the Depression is that we went from, we lived in Port Jervis on East Main Street in a big house with a lavender bathroom, and we had an electric refrigerator, we had a telephone, we had two cars, and a German maid named Louise, who incidentally went back to Germany during the Depression. You often wonder, she wasn't Jewish, so it's interesting, you often wonder how she ever fared with that. And we went from that to my memory, my feeling as like a 5 or 6 year old, to a cold flat, cold water flat, where my mother put her refrigerated foods on the windowsill outside in a box. And then they began sort of the climb back. I think they lost everything, and their home, their cars, and everything. And we began the climb back to, my father went to Detroit for a while to try to find a job, and they started the climb back, and every year we moved. And I thought we talked about this. Didn't we talk about this at
some
all?
Some of it. Not much.
Every year we moved, and that's kind of an interesting thing for me, because every year I went to a new school. Every September I went to a new school, because every year my mother got a little better house. And she worked in a factory. Everybody worked. She worked in a factory. My dad worked wherever he could get jobs, and then started to work in the produce business. And as that grew, we then moved to another house. And my mother was a wonderfully supportive mother of me. You know, all parents are not really the same to all children. I'm not sure that my mother was that wonderful a mother to my sister. But she was a wonderful mother to me. And I think if you look at the two of us, you can see who had the better mothering. And it's interesting that we both had the same mother. But my mother used to say to me, I'd come home the first day and she'd say, did everybody love you in school today? And I would say, they hated me. What do you mean, did they love me? And she always said, but they will love you tomorrow. And I think that that was a very great gift that she gave me that enabled me to walk into a room. I still don't like to go to movies alone, but I was able to walk into a room and feel like, well, maybe once they get to know me, they'll like me, kind of thing. And so she was a very supportive mother in that respect. And that was basically how they climbed back. And then my brother helped, and he was very bright, had a scholarship to Cornell, but they couldn't let him go because they needed his income. Then he went into the Army in 1940, and then when he was just about to get out, he was supposed to get out December 17th, 1941, and was shipped to the South Pacific at that time. So then things were a little better, but they never made it back to where they were. And my mother was very frustrated. She was very bright. She was brighter and had more drive than my dad. But in those days, it didn't matter if it was the woman with the drive and the intelligence. Whatever the husband made, that was where your money was, you know. And so she never really had all the things or all the good feelings about herself that I think she would have liked to have had. It's sort of too bad. I always think she should have been born in another generation. But that's how they made it back, just climbing, clawing back from that.
It's interesting, though, to see that it can happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And never on welfare or anything like that. You didn't do that.
Mm-mm.
You made
that
it.
That was something. A no-no for Jewish
and,
people.
You know, and the interesting thing, and I'm sure you both experienced it too, there was never a time when we didn't have the best and the finest food in our table. There was never a time when my sister and I weren't the best-dressed girls in school because my mother would stay up all night making an outfit for us so that we would be the best-dressed girls in school. You would never have known that money was so scarce.
End of side one, tape two. Continued on side two.